Shalom, everyone. Is everybody able to hear me? I know this is new for me to be able to give a share on Zoom, but I guess a few thumbs up will definitely let me know if you can hear me. Ah, awesome. Okay. Very special to be able to see many of you virtually, and I am very excited and honored to be participating in this learning series. And I thank you all for joining and participating, and for allowing me to share some Torah with you this evening. So we're going to begin. I'm going to try to share my screen with you to be able to show you a source sheet that we will be following. So just give me a second while I do that. And it seems that I am not able to share my screen. Oh no, okay. Hold on one second, I'm sorry. Just for the shared screen option. All right, you gotta love Zoom, no? All right, here we go. I do not know if my screen is being shared, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to put in the link in the chat if you would like to follow along. For some reason, my share screen option is not available and is not letting me share my screen. So the link is on chat if you'd like to follow along. So let's begin. Rosh Hashanah is a very complex day. There are many different dimensions to the day. We have Malchiot, where we talk about Hashem's kingship. We have Zichronot, where we talk about memory. We have Shofrot, where we talk about Shofar and the power of tshuva. And we look for guidance as to how it is we're supposed to approach this day and how we are to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And obviously, the place that we look to and the place that we look for guidance is our Torah. So as we look at the Torah reading selected and the Haftorot selected for Rosh Hashanah, it is clear that the center stage of the Torah readings and the Haftorot are the stories of very holy women. On Rosh Hashanah day one, we read about the story of Sarah and the birth of Yitzchak. We then follow with the story of Hagar and her banishment with her son Ishmael. We then follow with a unique story of a treaty taken by Abimelech and Abraham. And then we have the Haftorah for day one, where we dive into the story of Chana, who pleads passionately with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be granted a son. She's granted that son. She names him Shmuel. And then we read at the conclusion of the Haftorah her prayer that she services up to God. Day two of Rosh Hashanah, we read about the Akedah. And tucked into the end of the Akedah, we have the birth of Rivka, which is a unique ending to a very powerful and transformative story. The Haftorah for the second day, taken from Yirmiyahu, we read about Rachel, who's Mivakeha al Baneha. And so when we look at the Torah readings that have been selected for Rosh Hashanah, we see center stage. Our role models are the women, are the mothers of our past. And we ask ourselves, why these specific stories? They're beautiful stories, and God willing, we will go through them in our series and develop each character and what each story has to offer us. But when we think of the many various options that we could have had to learn about on Rosh Hashanah, perhaps just the halachic approach of the day, shouldn't we have used the psukim that teach us about Rosh Hashanah? Or if we wanted to learn about tefillah, we could learn from so many different characters, such as Moshe, David HaMelech. We could have used many different other features of the Torah, recognizing the creation of the world and Hashem's sovereignty and his malchut. Why specifically the stories of Sarah, of Hagar, of Chana, of Rachel? why is it that we concentrate on these women? So what I'd like to do is I'd actually like to share a very personal memory, but I think that it gives us insight into what it is that we are trying to achieve during the Torah reading of Rosh Hashanah, and through that lens, to be able to delve into those stories, to be able to understand the power of the day. If you were to ask me personally, where was it that I learned how to daven? I wouldn't say that it was from my first grade sitter play, where I first got my sitter and I was taught what to do. Now, don't get me wrong. It was an amazing experience. We had a great time performing. The great candy bag at the end was definitely a highlight. And yes, each year of elementary school, I learned a new tefillah. And as I got older in middle school and high school, I learned the meanings and I learned the Bayer tefillah. But where I really learned to daven was when it was Erev Shabbos and the craziness of Erev Shabbos started to die down. And my mother would approach the Shabbos candles, strike the match, light the candles, wave her hands over them, and say the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Shabbat. And she would stand there. Some weeks she would stand there for many minutes. Some weeks she would cry. Some weeks she would smile. But every week she would stand there. And it was at that moment, and it is that moment that I recall when I think about where I learned to daven, that I truly think about when I engage in my tefillah, when I engage in my connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was the role modeling that my mother had done at that moment where she connected to Hashem that ultimately gave me influence how I should then connect to Hashem as well. What's fascinating is that although this is a personal memory of mine, I believe that the choice of Torah readings and Haftorot that we have on Rosh Hashanah is truly a trip down memory lane of our national mothers, of our imahos, of our role models who model and show us what it means to engage in a relationship with God, whether it be through tefillah, whether it be through faith, or whether it be through action. That I believe these selections of the Torah reading and the Haftorah were chosen because it is our mothers who ultimately teach us how to achieve these goals. And if I can direct your attention, if you've been able to connect to the source sheet, which I put in the chat, the link, I apologize again, the share screen option for some reason isn't working, but you can click on the screen. I want to read for you a quick excerpt from the collective writings of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. And he says the following. He says, Rosh Hashanah is pervaded by a remembrance of the women whose mention evokes thoughts of enlightenment and admonition, devotion and exaltation, women from whom we hope to learn how one should view God and how to pray to him. Sarah, Hagar, Chana and Rachel pass before our eyes as shining figures. Their holy mission adorns them like a jewel. They radiate dignity. Each one greets us as a mother. Sarah with Isaac, Hagar with Yishmael, Chana leading Shmuel by the hand, and Rachel weeping for her children who exiled God from their midst. Rav Hirsch highlights to us these women and their stories have been selected so that we can reflect upon them. We can look at them. They hold our hands like mothers hold ours, and they guide us and they show us and they model for us what it is to engage in a relationship with Hashem, whether it's tefillah, whether it's faith, or whether it's action. So let us begin in exploring the Torah readings of Rosh Hashanah in the lens of, as we say, teshuva, tefillah, utzdaka, to be able to view and to be able to learn what are the things that we can learn from our role models that came before us as we approach this very holy day. So on day one of Rosh Hashanah, we start with the Torah reading of Breshit Chaf Aleph. We learn about the story of Sarah, who after many years of barrenness and much years of pain, ultimately has her beloved child that was promised to her just a year ago. And so the story starts, Hashem pakad et Sarah ka'asher amar vayas Hashem la'Sarah ka'asher diber. Hashem remembers Sarah and does exactly as he said he would. And she gives birth. And they come and they name the child, and the child is given his name, and the eighth day when he is given a brit milah, and his name is Yitzchak. Just as the psukim mentioned in Parshas Lech Lecha, when they were told that they would have this child. And the psukim continue, Va'Abraham ben Me'a Shana b'hivaleid et Yitzchak b'no. It was at 100 years that Abraham had his son. Va'tomer Sarah, S'chok asa li Elokim, Kol HaShomeya Yitzchak li. Sarah says, a mockery or a joke has been made for me, and all who hear about this will laugh at me. What's fascinating about this is that when Sarah originally hears that she is going to have a child at 90 and her husband at 100, she laughs because she doesn't believe it's possible. But now, having witnessed the impossible be possible, she recognizes the laughter behind her original laugh was that of perhaps non-belief, and it's turned into a laughter of belief. She recalls that she had laughed negatively with skepticism that it's possible to happen. And now she looks at her son as she's holding him in her arms. And she says, all who will see this, all who will hear that I actually gave birth to a child at 90 and my husband 100, right? Hashomeya Yitzchakli, they will laugh. V'tomer mimilel Avram hanikabanim sarakil dati ben lezukunav. Right, they will not believe that Sarah was the one to give Abraham a child in his old age. And what's interesting about part one of what we read on Rosh Hashanah is that Sarah represents a faith of the Jewish people that is important for every generation to revisit every year when we hit Rosh Hashanah. When the impossible becomes possible, we start off this story recognizing that Sarah, who was skeptical at the point where she laughed, now takes that laughter, changes it, and makes it into a laughter of hope and of proof that the impossible is indeed possible. And this is how we intro our reading of the Torah on Rosh Hashanah. Are we a people of faith? Our forefathers represent that faith. They represent the ability to look at something that seems impossible and make it possible. And one could suggest that, you know what, let's keep the Torah reading short and let's call it a day there. Let's put a period and let's move on to the Haftorah. But the story doesn't end there. The continuation of the Perek is part of our reading on Rosh Hashanah, not because we need to spend extra time in Shul, but because the story that follows complements and increases our understanding of what we should be thinking about that day. How does the story continue? Pasuk Tet, V'tireh Sarah et ben Hagar hamitzrit asher yalda la'Avraham misachik. Now, what's interesting is that Sarah sees that Avram's second wife, Hagar, her son is playing with Yitzchak, with her son. Now, misachik is an interesting word where Rashi has his interpretation that Yishmael was involving Yitzchak with things that were bringing sin to Yitzchak, and she wanted to separate him. But Rav Hirsch has a fascinating look at the word misachek, that what ultimately Sarah sees is that Yishmael looks at Yitzchak as a joke. He sees this child as saying, he is this impossible child. And how is it possible that a whole nation will emanate from him? There is no way that this can happen. Truly, the nation that God has promised Abraham must come from me. And when Sarah sees that it's Yishmael who believes this truly is impossible for Yitzchak to take the nation to where it needs to go, but he thinks it's himself, she says, he must be separated from my son. He must be banished with his mother, with Hagar. And so although it is not seen as a good plan in Abraham's eyes, the Torah continues to say that Hashem intervenes and tells Avram Avinu, right, listen to your wife, listen to Sarah, because what she tells you is good. Shema Bekola. And he guarantees that although Yishmael will not be the son who continues on the great nation that he has promised earlier on, he himself will have his own nation with his own greatness, just not the one that was promised. And so comes Abraham, and he has to do one of the hardest things in his life, banish his wife Hagar, as well as his second son Ishmael. And now the story continues that we look at the journey that Hagar and Ishmael need to take in the desert as they are banished. And so the story begins in Pasuk Yudalid, Vayashkim Abraham Baboker, Vayikach Lechem V'chemat Mayim V'yitein El Hagar. He gives his wife provisions, some food and some water for their journey, and he places them on her shoulder, Vayishlacheha, and he sends her away. Vatalech, and she leaves. Viteita, and she gets lost. Bamidbar, Be'er Sheva. She gets lost in the desert, and she doesn't know where she is. Vayichlu hamayim in achimat v'tishlach et hayeled. She loses the water. The water is finished in her flask, and now she doesn't know what to do. They're in the desert. They're going to dehydrate. They're facing death. So what does she do? Tishlech et hayeled. She throws away the boy. Tachat achat hasichim, under a bush, perhaps to give him shade, perhaps to give him a chance to recover. But when she sees that he is not getting better and not recuperating, v'teilech v'teishev la mineget harachek, she goes a distance, a far distance. What's the distance? Michatchvei keshet, she goes a distance of a shot, bow and arrow, ki amra, Al erebe mot hayaled. I cannot see my son die. V'tashiv min neged v'tisat kola v'tiveich. She goes away a far distance. She raises her voice and she cries. At that moment when she sees despair, when she sees that all hope is lost, she can't handle it. She doesn't want to view it. She doesn't want to see it. And what does she do? She throws the child and she removes herself from the scenario. And although she cries and she raises her voice because she's in pain, she gives up. She doesn't continue to try to comfort the child, to beseech God on behalf of the child. So much so that the next pasuk tells us, Vayishma Elokim et kol hanar. God hears the voice of the na'ar, of the boy. We just left off the previous pasuk saying that it was Hagar who was crying and raising her voice. But it wasn't aimed or geared towards God. Clearly it was a pain and a cry of devastation that the situation was lost. But who was calling out to God? Who was the one that God heard? It is the Na'ar, it is Yishmael. Malach Elokim appears to Hagar, min hashemayim, vayomer la. He says to Hagar, Malach, what's with you, Hagar? Al tiri, do not fear. Kishma Elokim el kol hana'ar. Once again, reassuring that who is God hearing? He's hearing the Na'ar. Why? Because the Na'ar is the one who is calling out Ba'asher Husham, and God is looking and listening at him at where he is at that moment. Now, Rashi makes some very interesting points. Number one, he says that the Kol Hana'ar is coming from the fact that Yishmael is davening for himself as a chola, which is a tefillah that comes before God. Even though many of us can daven for cholim, the actual tefillah of a chola in themselves has a added tefillah, which is a nice insight, but not necessarily something that we're looking into in our study right now. But Ba'asher Husham, we also learn that Rashi quotes a very famous midrash that says that many of the malachim said, why are you going to spare Yishmael as he's calling out to you? His future generations are not going to do good things to the future generation of Am Yisrael. And so Hashem says, no, I don't look at a person's future and judge him in that position, but rather I judge him in the position as to where he is. And although these are beautiful comments from Rashi discussing various parts of understanding tefillah, I actually want to concentrate on the fact that it is the absence of Hagar's tefillah that is so crucial to this story and perhaps why it is that we read it on Rosh Hashanah. There seems to be this need to shake Hagar and needs to enlighten her that she had completely lost her faith in a moment of despair. And that's not something that ultimately can be part of the destiny of this great nation that Hashem promises to Abraham, which shows us that perhaps it's at this moment that she forfeits that right because it is something that she lacks in. And Hashem wants to show us that being part of Am Yisrael is the opposite of what she does. So what does the Malach continue to tell Hagar? Kumi si'i et hana'ar. Get up, do something. Go to the na'ar. Chizki et yadei. Hold his hand. Boki ligoy gadol asimenu. He will be made into a great nation. Don't give up hope on him. You need to go and you need to make an action to be able to help him. And it is at that moment, kach elokim et einaha, that God opens her eyes, v'tir'e be'er mayim, that he allows Hagar to see a well of water, v'teleich, she goes there, v'timaleyat achemat mayim, she fills the flask of water, v'tashk et hana'ar, and she gives the na'ar water to drink. And what's interesting is that at that moment, Hashem didn't create a be'er from nowhere in order for her to get the water. Rather, he's just saying, you had all the tools in front of you. You had all the ability to make the situation better. You just had to shift your viewpoint. You just had to look at the situation differently. And had you done that, you would have seen that the Be'er Mayim was there all along. Now go. Now that I've shown it to you, take from the Be'er Mayim and give your son to drink. And what's interesting here is that she does, he survives, and he does in fact become a great nation. Now, what's interesting about this middle point in the story is that we look at the lack of tefillah of Hagar. Hagar is in a desperate situation, and instead of calling out and reaching to God, she gives up and she abandons the child. So much so that she has to be shaken by a malach and say, Kumi, you have to get up. You have to do something. You have to change what's going on and go service your child with water that's right in front of your eyes. You're just not seeing it. The tools are there in front of you. You just have to take it. And this is a very crucial point that I want to make, that this concept of prayer is going to come up as we transition to the Haftorah, but in a completely opposite approach through Chana. Now, for the sake of time, we won't be able to get into the last part of the Torah reading, which is the treaty of Avimelech with Abraham. But what I'd like to just point out is the first pasuk of this section, which is that once Ishmael is saved and he is going to be a great nation, Avimelech decides he wants to make a treaty with Abraham because he sees that Elokim Imcha, that God is with him, Bechol Asher Ata Oseh, in everything that he does. And what's interesting about this section is that when you see God, when you see something so clearly as having God in your life, then it has to inspire you to go to action, a call to action, in order to secure not just understanding that God is in your life, but ultimately using action to continue to promote that God stays in your life. So in this Torah reading of the first day, we see three major points: faith, prayer, and action. Faith being the fact that Sarah learns her lesson that the impossible is possible when it comes to God. Prayer from Hagar as to what not to do, not to give up when the situation becomes dire or the situation is in despair, but rather what you want to do is you want to approach the situation with the ability to say, I have the tools and I can make a difference and I can move forward and this doesn't have to be the end. And the last is action, which is when you recognize that God is in your life, then ultimately you seal it with a treaty, you seal it with a way of commemorating that action. Now, as we transition to the Haftorah of Rosh Hashanah, we see the story of Chana. Now, although we don't have the time to go through all the beautiful texts of Shmuel Aleph and Perek Bet, I would like to just point out a few things. The story does continue that there is a man who has two wives. One is named Penina, who has children, and one is named Chana, without children. And Chana is plagued, and she is devastated by the fact that it seems to be that her life will continue to be barren and that she won't be able to find that child she so desires. And although Elkanah, her husband, loves her tremendously, and he offers her double portions of food and love and attention, Chana realizes at that moment that her husband, although well-intending, does not understand her plight, does not understand where she is and how she feels. And so she does something which is quite remarkable. When she sees the despair staring at her in the face, she doesn't cave into it and she doesn't succumb to it. But Pasuk Tet, which I really believe is the turning point for Chana's story, is Vatakam. She gets up. She decides that she is going to do something in order for her to be able to change her destiny. And as she gets up, she eats, she goes to Shiloh, and she begins to daven in Heichal Hashem in the Mishkan. And she is marat nefesh, she is embittered, and her soul doesn't know where to turn, so it turns to God. Vayitz palel, and she davens, and she cries, and she makes a neder with God, and she beseeches God. And ultimately, she says, my status quo is not good enough. I need to turn it around. And what's fascinating about this choice of the Haftarah is that it is such a foil for what we see in the Torah reading. When we are introduced to Hagar, and Hagar is facing despair and is facing something in which she feels she can't get out of, she gives up and she doesn't continue to move forward. But when it comes to the Haftarah and we're introduced to Chana, here is the epitome of what we should be doing in Rosh Hashanah. We look God, so to speak, in the face and we say the status quo is not good enough. We need to go to higher heights. We need to change our destiny. We need to say that what happened in the past is in the past. And now as we move forward, we need you, Hashem, to change the situation that we're in. And that's exactly what Chana does. She gets up and she challenges God. And she says, you've made me barren. You've not allowed me to be the woman that you've created me to be. I want to be that mother. I want to be that nurturing figure that you have endowed women with, but you have not let me personally, Chana, in order to do so, I need you, God, to change around my destiny. And she davens and she says to God, turn my destiny around. And it's at that moment that she davens that Eli the Kohen sees her. He thinks that she's actually drunk because she is so passionate in her tefillah that she explains herself and Eli actually blesses her and says, you will have that child. And she does. Now, what's interesting is that the Haftorah does not conclude there. And what I'd like to do with the last few remaining minutes is to just say that as the Haftorah concludes in Perek Bet, Chana's tefillah is basically the tefillah, not that she said at the moment that she asked God for Shmuel, but rather it's her reflection of what that whole situation and what that whole experience was like. And as you look at her tefillah in Perek Bet, she basically discusses how you cannot approach your life and thinking that things will always remain the same, right? She says, for those who were mighty, they fall. For those who had children, they're left with no children. And the barren woman is the one who does have the multiples of children. For those who have been given death can also be given life. And for those who ask for life, that will be given. We see that ultimately, as she says, mekim yafar dal, from those who are in the dust, they are raised up, and the enemies that try to destroy are the ones that fall down. Everything can be turned topsy-turvy when we beseech God and when we connect to Hashem to be able to say, we want to change our destiny, we want to partner with you, and we want to move forward. What's interesting is that Rav Soloveitchik, in his work, Worship of the Heart, mentions that there are two types of davening in tsar, in pain. We can daven in pain when the externals around us are preventing us from leading the lives that we want. Put in what you will, illness, devastation, naturally, things that are out of our control but are happening to us. But Rav Soloveitchik talks about a suffering that happens from within. And he says, no one but the sufferer himself is involved in this deeply human anguish and conflict. It is the sufferer whose awareness oscillates between bliss and pain in the great negation of the finite that rises out of confrontation by the infinite. Neither spouse nor child nor parent may understand and sympathize with the lonely individual when his existential experience is at a low ebb. When trials, doubts, and inhibitions abound, the prayer echoing the depths of cries of questioning soul emerges from seclusion, from the loneliness of the individual whom everybody save God has abandoned, as we say in Tehillim, for my father and my mother has abandoned me and God will take me in. The psalmists speak of such suffering in the situation of the afflicted person overwhelmed by his pain, who pours out his complaints before the Lord. What Rav Soloveitchik says is that there is an inner suffering, an existential suffering, in which one calls out because no one else understands. Not a spouse, not a parent, not a child. Only God himself understands that conflict, that pain, as to not fulfilling what it is that you feel you want to be fulfilling. And what's interesting, when we plug it back to the story of Hannah, when she is sitting in her house and Elkanah is trying to comfort her and say, am I not better than 10 sons? I'm giving you double. I love you. I'll give you anything in the world. Hannah says, you don't get it. And as much as we can have a close relationship, the only one who's going to get me and get my pain is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does she do? Vatakam. She gets up and she goes and she davens to Hashem and she pours out her heart in tefillah. What I'd like to suggest as to one of the many reasons why these Torah readings were chosen for the first day of Rosh Hashanah is because what Hashem is trying to teach us in these Torah selections is that you need to approach me, Hashem, with the idea of I'm changing my destiny. I am not accepting the status quo. You learn about Sarah, who recognizes that the impossible is in fact possible. You learn from Hagar what not to do in a dire situation when all hope seems lost and your year seems as if it fell apart and it wasn't what you expected. You don't give up and say, well, that's what it was and that's what it is and I don't want to revisit the pain. You dust yourself off, you get up and you go. Kumi el hayeled. You have to get up and go to the boy and you have to continue to go until you achieve the destiny in that which you want. So much so that we see that with the story of Hannah, complemented in our Haftarah, that when no one else understands us and when no one else gets where we're coming from, Vatakam Hannah, we have to be a Hannah. We have to get up and we have to beseech God and say, the status quo is not good enough. We need to change something. We need to do something. And you call out to Hashem. And the power of tefillah is something that is extremely powerful and extremely important on the day of Rosh Hashanah. So Hashem invites us on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, remember the role modeling of your mothers. Remember as you watched, as Sarah laughed, as Hagar gave up, and as Hannah stood up, and understand that you now need to go and take those lessons and bring them with you as you approach me on this day. I hope, and I know that I've ran out of time, but I hope that in understanding Sarah, Hagar, and Hannah a little bit in this way, we're able to take this lesson and be able to use it towards our tefillah on Rosh Hashanah. God willing, for the second session of this series, we'll be talking about the Akedah and the unique ending of the Akedah, which is the birth of Rivka. Now, usually Rivka is usually never associated with the women associated with Rosh Hashanah. But what I'd like to show next class is that as we read about the Akedah, which shows man's ultimate obedience to God, there is an element of tshuva that Abraham goes through that is mirrored by the birth of Rivka and who Rivka was as a person, as an individual. And what I'd like to do next week is understand how that selection of the Torah reading, how the Akedah and the birth of Rivka ultimately teaches us how to approach God on Rosh Hashanah through tshuva. So thank you very much for joining. I apologize for going a little bit over, and I wish you all a wonderful week and look forward to learning with you, God willing, next week. Thank you very much.